Welcome to Preschool and Beyond, a podcast where we tackle some of the most common and the most challenging issues facing preschool-age children and their families. Recording from Discovery Child Development Center is your host, Mike DeLaude.
Hi, and welcome to episode 31 of Preschool and Beyond, Who's the Boss? Featuring Dr. Kristen Wins. Sometimes parents feel that they're doing all the right things for their child, but are not seeing the results they want. They end up feeling tired, frustrated, and overwhelmed at the end of the day. Today, Dr. Kristen Wins returns to our podcast to talk about her new book, No Wimpy Parenting. The book offers many hands-on strategies and techniques to help parents feel more empowered, confident, and respected at home. By shifting aspects of our parenting philosophy and implementing these methods, Dr. Wins believes that parents will start seeing the results they are looking for from their children. Thank you for joining us again today, Dr. Wins.
Thank you for having me.
So let's start off with your book title. So what do you mean by wimpy parenting, and why do you think it's harmful for both the children and the parents?
Sure. Well, I got inspired with the concept for No Wimpy Parenting about 6 years ago. And at the time, I was seeing a lot of wimpy parenting, so to speak, just as a mom, where I would be out with my girls at dance class or gymnastics, and I would see parents sort of giving these empty threats. Do you want to leave? If you don't straighten up, we're going to leave. Okay, do you want to leave? And then they would never leave. So I would sort of see that as a mom. And then in my office doing parent coaching, I would have parents coming in frustrated that the kids weren't listening. They had to ask them 10 times to do anything. They felt like they had no control. So I had my worlds collide, so to speak, where I thought, okay, we've got to do something about this. Parents should be stronger, have the authority that they deserve. So I was inspired to create No Wimpy Parenting movement, really, which started off more as a philosophy and services. And then this summer, I got the chance to write the book, which basically captures all the nuggets of wisdom that I've been compiling through the years and sharing with my parent coaching clients.
Part of parents kind of reestablishing that authority and respect is to kind of get rid of what you call these power suckers. What exactly are these things?
Yes, so that's a fun term that I invented. But I have this metaphor of water guns that I use when I'm doing workshops that basically sort of explains a visual where when a child is born, child and parent are each given a water gun and the water represents power. And as your child grows up, if you experience these power suckers, then you're having your water tank drained, so to speak. And then by the time you get to really important issues in the teen years, if you have an empty tank, your kid fully knows it, and then chaos ensues. So the power suckers, I name the five most common ones in my book, but they're things like kids always negotiating with you. They never just accept it as is. They want to negotiate or argue. Pushing parents' buttons is a big one. I see so much of that with my parents that work with me, where the kid knows just what to say and do to get the parent to lose it. there's also questioning and kids making decisions about things that they will and won't do when maybe parents deep down wish it was mandatory. Mm-hmm. For example, going to Boy Scouts or going to soccer or their therapy appointment. Mm-hmm. Kids say, nope, I'm not going this week, instead of the parents really having the say for that. And then the other one is partial compliance, where you ask a child to do something and maybe they don't tell you no directly and say, I won't do it, but they do a half-hearted attempt where you go back and realize, oh, they didn't actually clean their room. They just stuffed everything under the bed and hoped you wouldn't find it.
Yeah. And I know as a parent, it can be really hard to always be on top of these things. And sometimes it's so easy to not get into that, to fight with, you don't want to fight with them, you know, okay, you're thinking, is 5 more minutes so bad? Okay, they want to, you know, just finish this game or one more book doesn't hurt, which, you know, reading is good, but then it could lead to another and another.
Right?
And they know that if they can open that door a little bit, it just keeps opening wider.
It's so true. And kids are just amazing. Kids and teens are amazingly adept at finding those little cracks in the door and wanting a wedge in their foot to make it bigger. So, of course, as parents, we have to go through life and sometimes be flexible, because otherwise we would be driven crazy. But what the power suckers are really about is just raising awareness that these things are all around us. Kids are doing them constantly, and we need to have our guard up so that most of the time we can be combating them and shutting them down, essentially.
Yeah. And I think an important thing too to mention too, when you're talking about wimpy parenting, it's not about like screaming and yelling, but like you can really be demonstrating what you're calling wimpy parenting. You probably end up a lot of times screaming. You might start off nice. They're not listening. You're getting frustrated. And you can be firm and consistent and still have a very nice disposition and nice voice. You don't have to be yelling and screaming to really, get their respect.
Absolutely. And that's one of the biggest revelations parents have when they come to a workshop or read the book. Parents don't realize that when you lose your temper and you scream and yell, you're actually giving away all of your power to the child. They get a huge surge actually to see that their actions can cause you to lose it. So it really ends up being ineffective in the long term. And of course, it doesn't feel good for anybody to experience that.
Something we've talked about in some other episodes is really developing independence, getting children practicing decision-making skills. How do we differentiate when it's appropriate to give children choice and when, we need them to do something and it's not really up for choice?
Yeah, it's a good point, because it is good for kids as they get older to have more independence and more of a voice about what they do and where they go and how they dress. So it is a challenge for parents to find that line. I just encourage parents, if you live in a two-parent home, check with the other parent and come up with your short list of mandatory, non-negotiable, like, okay, you got to practice piano every day. You have to do your homework before you watch TV. You have to go to church. So if you have another parent, get on the same page. If you're on your own, just have a firm list in your mind of what things you care about so much that you want to be your choice, mandatory. Mm-hmm. And then other things as they get older, then let your kids have more of a choice in what sport they play, or if they want to dress in a way that you shudder at, but it's their identity, so you let it go.
Yeah. And I think you can also think about what's important to you, what they do need to do. And then within that, if you want to give them an option, like, my son has to practice piano, I want it done by 4:30. But I can, sometimes I'll take out like my appointment book. Should I put you at 4 or 4:15? So either way, he's done by 4:30. And,
that's
this way, he's thinking, okay, I'm not giving him a choice piano because, he needs to practice his piano that day. But, he's like, oh, I'll take 4:15. He thinks, great, I got these 15 extra minutes. Whereas, I just need it done by 4:30.
Yes, so. That's great. And that gets at a suggestion I give parents, to have a choice under the umbrella of mandatory.
Right.
So if you tell your kid, all right, you got to choose a school club to join because that's good for you, but you can choose which one. There are 12 clubs at your school. Yeah. You pick the one. We're just saying you have to choose one.
Yes.
So that is kind of a win-win.
Right. They're happy. You're happy with the choices. So definitely.
Yes.
So let's talk about consequences now a little bit. So you talk about, you have a clear way that parents can set consequences of the house that you call CWC.
Yes.
So what is it? And, at what age can parents begin using this?
Yes, it's kind of amazing to me that three little letters, an acronym, can be so powerful. But I can't tell you the number of parents who have learned about that technique, used it, and then they come back the next week and say, CWC is amazing. Mm-hmm. It's transformed our home. So it stands for command, warning, consequence. And that's the formula I recommend parents follow 99.999% of the time. So you give the command, and then if your child does it, awesome. If your child is delaying or refusing, then you give a warning. Okay, I said go put on your shoes and get your backpack. If you don't get up now, then you're going to lose video games after school. Then if the child complies, awesome. If he's still chasing the puppy around or saying, one more minute, I'm almost done with this game, then you say, okay, I gave you the warning. You didn't get up and put on your shoes. So now after school today, you lose video games. And that formula, CWC, should be followed in that manner, whereas a lot of parents I know vacillate between command, warning, 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 yeah, warning, warning, dance, yeah. And they may never get to the consequence, or it may come after 10 warnings. So you want it to be that tight formula as much as possible.
Right. Yeah. Even worse, it doesn't come. You know, if you do this, then you're not going to have to go to your friend's house, and then, you know, you wanted them to go to their friend's house.
Yes.
So think about what you're choosing for the consequences. And it is important to pick, you know, I think appropriate consequences, but probably the most important is, and you mentioned sticky notes, the follow through.
Yes.
You know, so it doesn't have to be, and oftentimes you don't need it to be a huge consequence, but there should be something, and something that you remember, it's reinforced. And for a younger kid, probably pretty close, you want it to when it happens.
Definitely. But that follow through, it's really harder than we realize, because parents are busy, we're tired, our brains are mush by the time we get home from a day at work. So it is a challenge, but that part of closing that loop is critical, because if you forget one out of three times and the kid ends up on his device or eating sweets that day or whatever, it greatly dilutes your power and the chances that your child will take you seriously the next time you give the warning.
Yeah. I remember once when I was a high school teacher just starting, I guess I asked the student to stay after school the next day, and he came the next day. Unfortunately, I had a very conscientious student detention. He's like, I was like, why are you here? And he that's right. And I realized I needed to keep a better system for keeping track, or no one was ever going to listen to me.
Yes, exactly. Same would be true in the school environment.
So let's talk a little bit about timeouts, because I know there are kind of two camps on this with parenting experts, the ones who really do feel that they are a good, necessary part of a discipline strategy, and then the other camp that, you know, finds them to be ineffective and recommends parents don't use them. So I know you are an advocate for using timeouts.
Yes. Well, yes. So I'm an advocate for timeout when it's used properly. And I find most parents just don't end up implementing timeout 100% effectively. And it's not rocket science, but it does actually have several steps to it. And if any of those steps are slightly tweaked in an ineffective way, it kind of takes down the whole system. So I just find timeout is very effective with little ones. Mm-hmm. So really, I mean, starting at one, really, age one to kind of that 5, 6, 7-year-old age, it's just very effective for, like you said, an immediate consequence for misbehavior. Mm-hmm. So if they're being disruptive or hyperactive or aggressive, then it's an immediate way to remove them from the situation, have them sit and be removed from the fun, think about it, sort of chill out for a bit, and then have the ability to apologize, say what they did and why they were sent to timeout, and get out again. So in my book, I do outline the many parts of that, but I do feel like if it's implemented effectively, it can be one of the tools in your tool belt. It's not the only one, but it's a really nice one to have when you've got little ones in the home.
In addition to using timeouts, I think everyone, no matter what their philosophy is, would agree that the best thing is to do preventative for those things to happen. And you have a nice system that you outline in your book that you developed that you call ROCKS.
Yes.
So tell us a little bit about that.
Sure. So again, some of these strategies are really simple on the front of them, but highly effective if they're used correctly. So ROCKS, I have a weak acronym that stands for in my book, because it turns out it's hard to come up with a phrase that makes sense. Right. But what we're talking about are the decorative rocks, like you would get at a craft store that you put in a vase. So my system just has clearly identified behaviors that you want to improve, the start behaviors, and then the behaviors you want to eliminate, the stop behaviors. Those are things like hitting, biting, mm-hmm. yelling, whining, tantrums. And you come up with a system that gives a value to those behaviors. So you earn rocks by doing the good things, obeying the first time, mm-hmm. keeping your hands to yourself.
Right.
And then you lose rocks for the no-no behaviors. And the rocks, they're cool on their own, but the main purpose is to be a currency to buy all the privileges that a lot of parents honestly give for mm-hmm. free. A lot of parents are giving TV time, cell phone, video games, treats, mm-hmm. sweets just for free. And I recommend that those things should be considered privileges to be earned. And the rock system is a great way for the kid to save up rocks and say, okay, I've got 10. Can I get my 30 minutes of TV time mm-hmm. for the day? Or I've got 5. Can I get a piece of candy? So it's just a nice tool that's very much about, like you said, focusing on the proactive, positive approach to rewarding the behaviors you want to see more of.
Right. I even got some math in there too for the younger ones.
Yes.
Counting out their rocks.
Yes.
So for a younger one, I would imagine, especially if you want to start off with a smaller amount of behaviors, I think you talked
yes.
about in the book, and you can kind of increase with time and as they get older. And an important thing I've seen, at least when we've done, we haven't done that at the school, but I know some students who have had at home and other places different behavior charts mm-hmm. will sometimes, the parent will have like 15 things for that day, and you know, the student got 14 out of 15, and they'll tell them, oh, sorry.
Oh,
you know,
it's yes. just like,
you know, for a student that's really struggling to suddenly, you know, put this huge, unrealistic expectation,
right.
I think can be really difficult, and that's why sometimes these don't work that well.
Right. And the other part of the rock system is it's ideally meant to be implemented throughout the day. So it's not some giant, you either got it or didn't for the day. It's meant to be throughout the day. Parents are on the lookout for desirable behaviors and saying, hey, I love the way mm-hmm. you're playing so nicely with your little sister there and cheering. Go put 3 rocks in your jar. Hey, you obeyed when I asked and you hopped right up. That's wonderful. Go put 5 rocks in your jar. So it's meant to be almost constant, immediate reinforcement for the child for specific behavior. So it's very motivating to them versus having some goal at the end of the day that's too broad
yeah.
or too far out in
right.
time.
No, I think that's definitely critical to see something.
Yes.
And smaller things that they can achieve with it versus, yeah, you mean telling a 3-year-old you need to get 500 before, you know, you get ice cream. It's just not really going to work too
yes.
well with them.
That's a recipe for a tantrum.
Exactly. One other thing I was just thinking about that parents sometimes ask is, how about like incidents at school? Would you recommend keeping those separate from a system like this? Or do you encourage people to tie it in, like if they get a either really good report at school or the teacher said they had a really hard time, would you tie that into your system?
Yeah, great question. I highly recommend the integration for sure. I mean, especially if a child is struggling in the school environment, it's a great way to tie those two together. So parents can easily put a behavioral goal on the chart that says, you know, check from the teacher for the day or to even break down the day into good morning, good afternoon, and get the teacher involved with just a simple way for the teacher to give a check. And then the child knows if they got a check for the morning or a check for the afternoon, they get X rocks then, or even for specific behaviors, turning in homework or whatever. There are all kinds of applications for the school-home interaction.
Really important point you make in the book is talking about that consistency at home. And we touched on this a little bit, you know, whether it's between spouses or if there's a nanny or a grandparent there. So right now, if you're in a house that, you know, people are all kind of using different approaches to discipline,
mm-hmm.
how do you recommend people get on the same page?
Yes, I find it's really common for parents to drift away from each other as far as style goes. It just happens where the strict one becomes stricter and the more permissive one becomes even more so because oftentimes they're feeding off of each other. And that, of course, is back to that, the child will find any crack
and
try to widen it. So it's just really important for parents to communicate. And in an ideal scenario, both parents would read my book, say, this is brilliant. Yeah. Let's do everything she says. But even if we don't have that scenario, the more parents can communicate and say, okay, well, you're over here and I'm over here. Where can we meet in the middle on some of these rules or goals or issues and try to just have a happy medium of that is absolutely in agreement so that for the children, they're seeing that united front and hearing the same rule and expectation from mom and dad. And sometimes parents honestly do need a professional to help with that. They may not know what's reasonable. Is he reasonable or is she reasonable? So sometimes doing some parent coaching or seeing a therapist for just a few sessions can go a long way and help and get parents on the same page. Even divorced parents can benefit from that.
Yes. And, I know even just when we talk to parents, we're having a child who's having trouble with some of the classroom rules. We'll talk about like what do you do at home trying to get us using the same language, school versus home. So I know how important within that home it's important being on the same page and just getting that consistency and knowing what the expectations are for that child is just so important.
Yes.
I think we are all so busy trying to really get our children to their activities, to school. We have work, other things going on in our lives. Self-care, especially for young parents, can often go out the window.
Yes.
Why do you spend a chapter talking about this? Why is it so important to you?
I am so passionate about self-care because exactly like you said, I just see it is often the first to go for parents and especially for women who oftentimes are doing traditionally more of the childcare, but not necessarily, in this era. But I think for you to be the best parent and spouse, if you're married, that you can be, self-care is essential. And it's kind of a buzzword now that people throw out there to mean different things. It doesn't necessarily mean you have to get a weekly massage and pedicure and and sit at a coffee shop. But I think the basics are essential to try and exercise and get enough sleep and turn off your screens before bed and have a social life that's not only linked with your children's activities. Those things just refuel you. And a lot of the parents I work with who are neglecting self-care, they're so stressed and so frazzled and frustrated that they are more likely to succumb to power suckers or to not put up the good fight when a child is trying to wear them down. So it just is going to make you a better, more effective parent. And we all know sort of it's this cyclical thing where then the kids are seeing that and seeing you feeling strong and healthy and they're feeling better. And it's also, of course, great role modeling for kids to see you taking care of yourself.
Yeah. I actually just finished a book, Why We Sleep, it was called, which is a great book. It's actually really, I've been loving my sleep more. I'm really working hard to get more. Talking about how, people often come to him. They're like, well, I just can't sleep more because I'm so stressed and I just can't get everything done. He's like, well, if you slept more, you actually would get more done. You'd be a lot more efficient. So we, think we have to do all these things. We can't take a moment to breathe, collect our thoughts, go for a jog, go to sleep. But we're going to be better parents. We're going to be better spouses, better at our job if we pay attention to those things.
Yes. Yeah. I can't remember her first name, the lady who started Huffington Post. She's a huge advocate for self-care and sleep because she basically worked herself to the bone, go, until she had some kind of a physical collapse just from exhaustion and neglecting her health. So she's a real advocate that you can be highly productive and efficient like she is and still carve out the time to take care of yourself.
Yeah, no, that is just so important. So towards the end of the book, you talk about what you say is the softer side of wimpy parenting.
Yes.
And really developing that strong relationship with your child. So what are some ways during the preschool years parents and their children can work on their relationship and spend quality time.
Yes, I'm a huge fan of the daily special time, as we call it. So when we're working with parents of little ones and, you know, on up through the tween teen years, even, we really recommend it's critical to try to carve out 15, 20 minutes of one-on-one time with your child. And it may not sound like a lot of time, but there is something about that amount of time that, you know, there's research behind showing that kids who get that tend to do better across the board. So sometimes parents get stressed and say, well, I don't have the time every night to do that. But as long as most nights, one of the parents is carving out that time with the child, then it's meant to be child-led where the kid picks the activity. It's amazing how much that can improve behavior, honestly, during the day, because if the kids are getting fed and nurtured with that quality time with you, that's not about reprimands and discipline, right. They're going to be more motivated to behave. So finding moments for the special time, I'm a big fan of nighttime snuggles at bedtime, even for older ones, that kids need that time with us at the end of the day. And just to look throughout the day for moments to give encouragement and praise and physical affection. That kids need that, like they need food and water and sunshine. Yeah. So parents, even when they're frustrated with their little ones, need to be consciously looking for moments to give them a high five or a hug and say they love them, how proud they are. Those things are really critical to the parent-child relationship and just to the child's development.
Yeah, no, I strongly agree with that. I started doing a special time like activity about 6 months ago with my kids.
Cool.
And they love it. And I didn't think it was going to be a big deal. I didn't know if they'd like to do it.
Yes.
But it was just really 10 minutes or so.
Yeah.
And like every day, no matter, you know, what's going on. And when you have children in elementary school, it's so busy when they get home. You know, they
yes.
have homework, sports, other things.
Yes.
And, but just having that time, you know, we might feel stressed with each other trying to get things done. But, you know, just having some quality, non-stressful, fun
right.
time. They get to choose the activity, which
yeah.
is also good for them and
mm-hmm.
planning things out. And so, yeah, I can't recommend that enough, too.
Awesome.
That's great.
That's great. You're a believer.
Yes, absolutely. So that brings us to the final portion of our show, the show and tell segment. So do you have a show and tell for us today?
Yes. I always try to end my workshops telling parents that at the end of the day, I want to make sure parents understand that the No Wimpy Parenting movement revolution I'm trying to start
yeah.
is not about parents being on an ego trip and feeling like, yay, we're in charge, big people rule.
Mm-hmm.
It's really about what's best for kids. And we absolutely know that children thrive when they know where the boundaries are, what the rules are, with structure, predictability, that actually makes kids feel nurtured and safe and help with stress. So even though kids might not admit it, that's what they need. And that's why ultimately the No Wimpy Parenting philosophy is about what's best for the kids, not just for the parents feeling better.
Yeah. So if parents are interested in learning more about your philosophy, your revolution, No Wimpy Parenting,
yes.
They can order the book. And you also have more information and consultations you do. Can
yes.
you tell us about that?
Yes. So the book can be found on Amazon if you just search for the No Wimpy Parenting Handbook. But if parents want a combination of the book and coaching, either in my office or through video chat, that's also an option. And they can get my contact information on our website, winsfamilypsychology.com or nowimpyparenting.com.
Great. And we'll link to all that on our show notes page as well.
Great.
Well, thanks so much for coming back to our podcast. And we're so happy to introduce your book to our audience. It's been a pleasure having you on today.
Thank you.
You can find links to what we talked about today on our show notes page, www.discoverychilddevelopmentcenter.com, on Facebook at facebook.com/preschoolandbeyond. Thank you for listening today, and we'll see you again in 2 weeks.